coming from being an established kind of Camogian footballer over to a new sport, you kind of feel that you're kind of not going to be good enough or as good as the other girls. If I set smaller goals, kind of more realistic ones that you can achieve in a shorter space of time, I think that kind of keeps me more motivated and focused on kind of the bigger goal.
Hi everyone, I'm Manav Bhatia and welcome to The Sit Down, the podcast that explores the mindset, motivations and opinions of elite athletes and companies associated with Sport Endorse. Sport Endorse is a sports management agency specializing in endorsements and commercial partnerships between athletes and organizations. Our brand new platform connects brands and athletes directly to engage and negotiate commercial opportunities. The platform ensures full transparency and offers an authentic sponsorship experience in alignment with company objectives and athlete values. So, whether you're an athlete seeking ambassadorship or a label looking to engage with sports influencers, check us out on sportendorse.com or download the Sport Endorse app from Apple Store or Google Play. Today, we bring to you a special episode with not one but two sporting personalities from Ireland. Firstly, let me introduce Eamon Donaghy, who's an All-Ireland winner with DCU and a county senior winner with his home club of Roscommon. Today, Eamon works as a journalist with the Irish Times, as a TV presenter and an analyst, putting him in a unique position where he can balance his playing career and work in media. Eamon will be the host in this episode. And now, moving to our featured elite athlete for this episode, Orla O'Dwyer. Orla is an outstanding athlete who has been successful in three different sports, which are Gaelic football, Camogie and Australian Football League. In Ireland, she's captained her Tipperary senior Camogie team and was nominated as the Intermediate Ladies Player of the Year in 2019. More recently, she's won the 2021 AFLW Championship in Australia with her team Brisbane Lions. So without further ado, here's the episode coming up.
Hey Orla, how are you getting on?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm good. I'm talking to you in Tipperary, am I? You're back from Australia. I can see on your social media from early June you're having a bit of a lowdown period before you came back over there.
Yeah, I got back there the end of May. I kind of spent a month after the grand final just over there kind of traveling and kind of getting to explore more of Brisbane and stuff, so that was exciting as well. But no, back home now in Tipperary playing and training with the Camogie in football. But it's great to be back again after such a successful season.
And tell us a bit about the difference in life since you've been back, because obviously you went over there and you were there for 6 months, and I suppose things are kind of slowly coming back to normal or close to normal here at the moment. But you went over there, it was zero COVID, and there was a lot of things open. Like, how was life over there? Was it pretty normal the whole way through?
Yeah, I suppose I'm very lucky over in Australia. When I first went over, let's say back in November, I had to do the 2 weeks hotel quarantine, which was tough enough, but since then, literally, it's like normal over there. We had a couple of stages where we went into a 3-day lockdown if there's a few cases, but that never got any longer than that. So, yeah, I was very lucky over there, and especially being in Brisbane too, they seem to keep it really under control. So, I suppose it was hard then adjusting coming back home to some restrictions and wearing the masks again and stuff. But, it's great to see things back opening here again.
And in terms of when you were in that hotel quarantine, I know I was seeing the Australian Open and the tennis players were trying to do a bit of exercise in their hotel room. How was that? Because I assume you were going into a pretty hard pre-season straight afterwards.
It was definitely mentally challenging at times, but I was actually very lucky. For the time I went over, they weren't let's say as strict with the quarantine. I was able to leave my room a couple of times a day and go down for a walk, let's say on a kind of balcony they had, and I could do kind of workouts and a bit of exercise outside and reading and stuff. And then in fairness, Brisbane Lions were very good and they gave me a bike and some weights and an AFL ball to kind of keep busy that way and kind of keep up fitness as much as I kind of could. So that was great. And then you could make deliveries too. So you could get Uber Eats and you could get Coles deliveries, like a supermarket delivery into your room. You had a fridge there and stuff. So yeah, it was fine actually. And I got through most of it, but it was just towards the end. I remember the last 3 days, the Wi-Fi went in the hotel. So I was pretty stranded with no TV and no internet over there. So that definitely was testing the waters.
Yeah, I can imagine you're kind of completely cut off there.
Yeah.
And in terms of then the general, you know, bars or I obviously you were training hard and stuff like that, but for meeting for friends, coffee shops, bars, restaurants, everything was open. So it must have been kind of a big shock compared to November here and then what you were seeing in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. And I remember I came out of hotel quarantine on a Saturday at, I think, 6 a.m. or 6:30 a.m. And we had training that morning at 7:30. And I remember going straight to training. One of the coaches collected me and everyone just coming up, giving you hugs and coming like into your kind of bubble, let's say. And it was kind of weird coming from a lockdown back home and coming from hotel quarantine into just, I suppose, a team and group of plus 30 girls. But I suppose then you kind of adjust to it quickly enough. And I was very grateful to, I suppose, not be in a lockdown over there and to kind of live the normal kind of life. So, yeah, it was great.
And you made a decision to kind of cut short the season with Tipperary to go over and have a full pre-season. Like, what was that a hard decision, and was it part of the decision the fact that you kind of knew that you were going to go over to somewhere where there was, as well as obviously you needed the full pre-season to have the season that you went on to have, but also that you knew there was going to be a bit more life outside of training as well in Australia?
It was definitely a tough decision to make. I suppose the unknowing of it here as well, we didn't know how the kind of club season went ahead first, and I was very grateful to get to play all of that, and then the county went ahead, and I suppose every day I was kind of just taken as it came. But I was lucky enough to get to play a couple of games before I went, but I missed out on the last football game and also the All-Ireland Camogie quarterfinal and the semi-final too. But I suppose it was kind of a decision I just had to make. I knew how important it is to get to pre-season after being away from the sport, and I suppose being behind kind of with AFLW, not having the experience the rest of the team would have. And then again with flights too, it was very hard to get flights over to Australia. I had a couple cancelled on me, and I knew that once I knew a flight was going ahead, that I don't know when my next opportunity would have came to get over there, because I know the rest of the Irish girls didn't go over till December time. So that was definitely cutting the pre-season short, which I didn't want to do, and I wanted to give it my all kind of going into the season and pre-season. So I think in the end, yeah, it was the right decision, but it was definitely very hard, and letting the management and teammates know too.
And since you've been back, like, what's the main difference in terms of your training schedule? Because you're living a professional athlete's life, and then you're back here, and you know, it's summer obviously, and you've been a student over here, but you're still the rest of your team. Like, are you training way less in terms of quantity, and would you notice a difference in the, I suppose, there's just even the physical demands?
I suppose I've been playing with the Camogie and football the last couple of years. So I'd always have to kind of split myself between that and be training most nights. I suppose the difference this year is I'm coming straight into, I was here for the couple of league games at the end and straight into championships. So I kind of missed the pre-season kind of stint of Camogie and football, the kind of hard training and running. And it's more just working on skills and sharpness and kind of creating a team and getting involved with the team again and into like the set plays and that kind of thing. So it was very different to last year. Whereas when I came back last year in March of 2020, we were in lockdown for a couple of months. So I was doing all the kind of pre-season running and gym and stuff. Whereas now it's a lot more game style stuff and playing a lot more games. So it's very enjoyable.
And what was kind of an average week of training over there in Australia? Obviously the pre-season would have been more kind of training the ratio of trainings matches would have been higher, but like what was an average kind of week?
So pre-season was a lot more kind of demanding, and I suppose the sessions went on a lot longer. So we kind of had three field sessions, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and then you'd have your two gym sessions as well, with maybe the Monday and Friday or Monday, Wednesday, and then you kind of get your recovery in with that as well throughout the week. So it was a very demanding week, especially with AFLW, they really focus on kind of injury prevention and prehab. So you don't just arrive to training, let's say half an hour beforehand. Everyone will be there at, let's say, 4 or 4:30, and training wouldn't start till 6. And everyone's just making sure that maybe they're having their one-on-one coaching meetings and doing their prehab and getting the kind of proper warm-ups or extra kicks in. And then I suppose after training, everyone has ice baths and they do the recovery there. So you might get home to maybe 9:30-ish. So it was definitely a longer training stint as well. And the gym as well was longer sessions too. I suppose working on strength for coming into the season. And then once we went into the season, then the sessions were a lot shorter and sharper, and the same with the gym, kind of more power stuff. But I suppose it just kind of was longer kind of training and longer hours.
Is that's one of the big differences then, that kind of preamp for training? And would that be something that you kind of, yeah, that's obviously something that would be a struggle for you to do with Tip, because there's girls coming back from Dublin and coming back from work and rushing in. They're probably rushing to get there on time, not to mind being there 2 hours early. But would you notice a massive improvement in that kind of, just for your mindset and getting ready for sessions and then obviously for your recovery for the next session, would you notice a big difference in that kind of thing, them small inches?
Yeah, I suppose I really enjoyed it as well, because I suppose when everyone else is doing it, you do it then as well. And everyone kind of had individual prehab programs to work on. So I had a bit of a shoulder injury a couple of years ago, so I'd be doing a lot more of that kind of stuff. So everyone was kind of individualized and knew what they had to do. And we were kind of in different pods, groups of 10, because of COVID. So everyone was kind of doing their own thing. And it was kind of done very professionally and done very well. And the girls knew then once training was starting that it was the same kind of way. And after with the ice baths too, there was kind of a rotation system. But no, I think here now it's getting a lot better. And I think a lot more girls and teammates are really interested and involved in doing the kind of prehab stuff. And we do a lot of band activation and that kind of recovery nowadays with Tip too. So it's definitely improving a lot, but it is very demanding, especially coming from work and different jobs and different areas.
And in terms of all that kind of extra thing and the amount of load that you had in terms of your training and then matches coming up, how did you manage to fit in? I'm sure you had to do a lot of extra bits on your own to catch up on the, you know, learning a new game. Like how did you fit in that extra stuff, and what was the extra stuff that you were doing?
Yeah, so for me, I suppose the big thing was the AFL skills themselves, so the kicking and handballing and kind of getting used to the game plays again. I felt this year I was a lot more comfortable on the ball, just I suppose from having that previous season experience. So for me, it was a lot of extra kind of kicking when I can, and even meeting up with Lions coaches and the head coach, and kind of just going through clips and just seeing kind of set plays and how rotations work and kind of getting used to that. But I suppose you kind of just make the time, and there's usually a couple of more girls as well that want to work on kicking as well and the extras too. So I was very lucky to have that. And I suppose being a professional kind of sport, you can have the time to do that, and as well being there early for training as well, you do get them maybe half an hour before training to get out and work on those kind of crafts and skills.
And how important, I suppose, was just confidence in terms of that, because you're learning that new skill and you're practicing those clips, you're analyzing the clips and you're practicing the skill set, but at some stage you've kind of got to go out, you're going out there and putting it on, you know, you've got to just at some stage just trust yourself, I suppose, because inevitably these girls have played a lot more of the game than you, and that's probably going to always have been the case. But like, you at some stage you had to really back yourself, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. And even if I compare this year to last year when I was over there, I struggled a lot more, let's say, my first season. I suppose being just with a new team in a new country, kind of playing a new game, what was hard, and getting used to rotations and how that works. So I think coming from being an established kind of Camogie footballer over to a new sport where you're kind of messing up the drills essentially and starting from the bottom of the ladder, was very kind of mentally straining, and you kind of feel that you're kind of not going to be good enough or as good as the other girls. But I suppose then that mindset kind of shifted this year once I knew I had that experience under my belt, and I suppose I knew what to expect as well. I kind of like knowing what's coming, and I knew what preseason was going to look like and how the games were going to look too. So, and I was playing a different role as well. So this year I kind of played more of a midfield role, which I really enjoyed, and it's very similar to what I play in Gaelic football. And I suppose, yeah, just having the confidence and kind of just believing and trusting in yourself was huge. And the girls, in fairness, and the management were very good at kind of giving you that confidence to go ahead.
So a lot of that confidence and that kind of mindset shift came from having had the preseason, having had done the work. Like when you're playing in like even back home here, when you're playing for Tip and when you were over there in your first season, like how do you deal with that kind of when you're struggling for confidence, and you know you're learning that new game and you're making mistakes and you're afraid of maybe getting taken off or of what people are thinking, like them doubts start coming into your head. How do you clear those? Like, because you obviously can't be having those thoughts, especially in AFLW when you can get tackled very quickly if you're dwelling on the ball, I assume.
Yeah, definitely. And I think a big thing for me, and I'm probably still working on, is just the fear of failure. I always kind of thought that, especially last year, that I wasn't good enough, or would I be dropped the next week, because the season is so short and you're playing every weekend. It's a quick turnaround to the next game. And you're kind of, once the game's over, I was kind of questioning if I was going to be good enough to be playing the next weekend kind of thing. But I suppose this year I just kind of completely shifted that mindset. And I think the big thing was kind of just work, knowing what I can control. So I knew that I was preparing well, I knew that I was doing the extra stuff I should be doing, that I was had a clean diet, I was hydrating all the time, getting enough sleep, doing the things outside that I can control, as well as I suppose performing at training and giving my best when I was at training and all that I could do there. So yeah, I think just those kind of simple 1%er things outside of the AFL that you can control, but also when you're at training to actually be physically present there and give it your all, definitely improves that.
I've seen some media interviews with you before where you've said that you weren't a star growing up with the Tipperary underage teams. You kind of had to work hard. Did that kind of help? You've been in that situation before where you've kind of had to graft your way to getting to your maximum, and you kind of felt like you could do it again then?
Yeah, definitely. I think being kind of average, very average here when I was younger, I kind of knew that I always kind of believe in hard work and just kind of doing the things that can help you outside of the game. So with Camogie and football underage, I wouldn't have been that great. So I knew that I had to maybe do a lot of extra ball work and even just fitness and gym and kind of my diet and stuff. I'd always make sure that I had that on point and control what I can control outside of training. And once I get to training, I know that I've those things done. But yeah, no, it definitely, it was kind of a similar situation. I suppose this time it was more kind of heightened because it's such a demanding sport when you're there, and it being in pre-season, it can be very intense at times. But it definitely helped. And I think just believing in yourself as well and taking on board all the advice you can, and I suppose from other girls as well, they've been playing the game a lot longer than you, so listening to what they're saying and kind of taking that on board and having something to work towards for the next session.
And then playing like multiple sports, Camogie and football for your county, like was there always that kind of, you obviously had to learn a new game this year, but was there always that kind of time of the year where you were trying to, you know, balance on one of the sports being the priority and the other one, and trying to keep the skill set on top for both of them? Do you think that helped in Australia?
Yeah, definitely. I suppose when I'm in Australia, I just focus on the AFL, and then when I come back here, I really focus on the Camogie and football. But yeah, that'd be huge for me. And I always kind of have been very organized and kind of focused when it comes to my training, because a lot of the time the trainings can clash, and you kind of have to have good time management and be prepared for the kind of week and where you're going to be going training with the two different teams. So I think that definitely helped me going into the pre-season and going over to Australia, knowing that how physically demanding it can be, that you have been kind of through that with the Camogie and football here.
And growing up, was the reason why you kept kind of the dual aspect going was because you just loved the two games, or have you had a preference with Camogie or football growing up, and if you had to pick one, what would it be?
I always ask that question about picking between the two. I suppose I still would say the same thing. Like I still love going to both trainings, and in the evening time I look forward to going meeting the girls and getting out proper training and seeing everyone again. And I suppose I'm very lucky, and in TIP we're very lucky to get the opportunity to continue to play and both codes as well, and there's another girl, Roisin Howard, who's doing the same as well this year. So it's nice to have another girl in the same position and someone kind of to talk through that and kind of decide where to go training at times. But in fairness, the management on both teams here are super supportive, and they're great in letting us maybe miss a training a week to go to the other, because there's a clash once or twice a week. So that's very good. And I suppose I'm privileged in that way that I can continue to do that, because I know a few other counties may not have the opportunity to do that. So I'm definitely lucky to be able to play the both.
And I see that you've signed up for a new season in the AFLW. That means does it kind of putting off your final year of university, like how has that decision been? Has that been kind of a hard decision, or is it kind of a no-brainer for you because of the opportunity?
I think after just winning the grand final and seeing the success and how much of a better year I had this year with the AFLW, it kind of wasn't a no-brainer that I would go back if I was given the opportunity. I think just seeing how far you can kind of go in AFLW is what I kind of want to see. And also, I suppose, having that taste of success, you kind of want to go back and do it again and get another grand final medal. But it is tough. And I suppose education is very important to me too. And I've done my 2 years in UL of PE and Irish teaching, and I've two left to do. So I suppose, yeah, that's what I'm in the middle of trying to sort out now and seeing what my options are and what I really want. Because I know sport doesn't last forever, unfortunately, and there is career after sport too. And you kind of want to be set up for that too. So definitely in the middle of trying to sort that out and weigh up my options and decide what I really want to do.
And what would be your kind of your motivation in terms of, you've got, like last year you won the grand final and like you've obviously had success with TIP before that, and you've represented TIP and you're kind of have it all at the moment, but like you obviously have your own individual motivations and your team motivations, but what would be your kind of constant motivation? Is it just to get the most out of your own performance, or is it to try and win as much as possible, or like what focuses you for those tough pre-seasons?
I think it just is the kind of the love of the sport really as well. And I love being around that professional kind of sport lifestyle over it, especially in Australia. And I think I just love being around team environments too. And I kind of feed off other people's energy and enthusiasm. Even if you might, like, every training is not going to be great. When you show up to some trainings, you might be feeling the best, but I feel when you come away from trainings, you always feel 10 times better. And I love that feeling you get from, I suppose, working hard and being around such great groups as well. And I'm very lucky with the three sports that there is such a great groups involved and great management too. And I suppose that's the kind of real motivation. And I suppose kind of making people around you proud. So I couldn't get over the support here in Ireland with the AFLW from family, friends, and the amount of people who have even just came up and said they've enjoyed watching the games and that they got up at those crazy hours to watch the AFLW, although they probably don't really know the rules or anything about it. But that kind of thing really is motivating. And I suppose seeing how much of an impact you can have that way through people's lives and I suppose the younger generation as well. Someone to kind of look up to and see that there is lots of opportunities to go elsewhere with girls, especially in sport, and to get the opportunity to go to Australia too and even play with your county as well is huge as well. So I suppose it's kind of a mixture of everything really for motivation, and it's not just one single thing.
Yeah, so you'd be kind of you're enjoying the journey and the whole lifestyle more so than like sitting down and setting yourself like these goals and like, you know, completely just going after these individual, you know, goals each season. Is that more so the case?
Yeah. And I think, I suppose every sports person kind of, and every sports team does have goals of, let's say, winning All-Ireland finals and if it's grand finals as well. And to kind of look at the big picture of what they want to achieve. But yeah, I suppose there is that aspect of it, but I suppose I also, look at the kind of one percenters things. So maybe not looking at the big picture, but just looking at small things every day that can kind of make a difference going into the kind of bigger picture. So whether that's something simple like improving in maybe AFL, maybe bouncing out is something I really want to work on, or marking, and just kind of bringing that into your game. And the same with being in the gym, maybe it might just be to get a lot stronger or lift heavier or get faster as well. And I think having these kind of small goals to work towards makes the bigger goal a lot easier to achieve. And that's kind of where I look at things.
Where did that mindset come from, that kind of 1%? Or was that something that you got from like family kind of advice, or from just seeing other kind of more experienced teammates? Where did that kind of come from? Or is it just something you've always had naturally?
I suppose there is a lot of, you see a lot about it as well online and social media. People talk about the kind of smaller set goals. But I think if I kept looking at big goals, I'd never be impressed or I'd never kind of reach those and never be happy for not reaching them. But I think if I set smaller goals, kind of more realistic ones that you can achieve in a shorter space of time, although it might be something small, I think that kind of keeps me more motivated and focused on kind of the bigger goal. So even with the AFL, for example, we'd love to get to a grand final and win it. But in the back of my mind, it was kind of the more simpler things like getting over this first game or making sure that you do the simple things right and making sure that you're sleeping enough or eating and keeping hydrated and making sure that you're kind of doing something every day that's 1% better than what you did kind of yesterday, that would add up at the end into the kind of big picture and into the bigger goals. And then once you do get that, then you kind of realize how, looking back, how all these little goals made that big goal so much easier.
And what is it the Irish girls kind of have that they're kind of, they're obviously have a massive interest in bringing the Irish girls over. Is it the athleticism that you have that gives you kind of a massive advantage, because you are settling in very, very quickly? I know you said it took you your first year, you felt like kind of there was a period where you struggled for a little bit, but you were still playing the games. And then in your second season, you were second for their Player of the Season award and won the grand final. So like, what do you think is the natural strengths that you have, or from the game here and for you in particular, that's allowed you to settle in there so quickly?
I think it's just playing with county and stuff. Like, you can see with county teams now, a lot of them are going as if they are professional and they have all this kind of background team and they kind of do proper trainings and have all, like, they're basically from playing a professional sport to coming back into setups. They're not far behind them, and I think that's huge. And the amount of training and demands that a county player does along with working as well full time or studying is huge. And I think that's where they kind of really see that. So having that athleticism and strength and kind of speed and power from playing camogie or football or GAA, I suppose that really benefits going over to the AFLW. And I suppose it's just learning an extra few rules and the contact about the game too, which is huge over there. But yeah, I know it's great seeing how successful all the Irish girls are, and that there is such an interest in the Australian clubs getting over the Irish girls. So yeah, I think it's just a mixture of playing county setups for so long, and how good the county setups are becoming literally like professional sports teams.
And where do you see the AFLW going over the next couple of years? It's you know, it's growing in size and teams and interest, and like over here there's great interest, and it was on the TV, and like are you seeing that like day by day, that massive increase in the exposure for the game over there?
Yeah, definitely. Like they're only in their fifth season this year of AFLW, so it's very new over in Australia. But even just seeing how far they've grown from season one or two to now is huge. So I think it's definitely going to get a lot bigger. And over in Australia, they have lots of academies of girls coming up, and you see a lot more kind of girls being involved with different teams and playing as well, and it's huge over there. And now that it's becoming kind of international as well, and you can watch it from, let's say, here in Ireland too, which is great, brings more interest to it. So I think it's definitely getting bigger and bigger every year, and it's exciting to see how far it can go.
And it's unlikely that it'll be in the next year or two, but like as the AFLW continues to grow, I assume it'll be harder for the players who are being contracted to be able to come back and play for their counties and stuff like that. Do you see that becoming more of an issue down the line? Because like it's a huge opportunity now for all of you, but like it is a no-brainer to take that opportunity because you can still come back and play for your county. But I assume it would be a much tougher decision if you had to choose between the two.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there's going to be more teams as well. And I think it's the next 2 years, they're getting four new teams into the AFLW season. So there's going to be 120 more players coming in. So that obviously extends the season then for at least another month on top of that. And then will they make the preseason longer too? It's definitely going to become more like the men's season as well, which is a 23-week season at the moment. So it is very long season, and I think that's the kind of way they're heading towards. So there will be probably a time where they'll have to pick and choose between, I suppose, coming back to Ireland playing over there, because it just won't be feasible to be able to come back and over, and as well missing big blocks of training like that as well will be hard. And I suppose it's not fair as well on the county teams as well if you're kind of just coming back in towards the end of the season or during championship as well. So yeah, I suppose that will happen down the line eventually.
But for how things are now though, it can only really be good for the women's sports here, because you're coming back with all this experience and knowledge, and also your exposure for yourselves as individuals is growing, which helps grow women's sports here in general.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's great the way it is working at the moment to be able to come back and get involved then with the county setups as well. Coming back then in May, you have the last few league rounds, but you can get ready then for championship going in, which is great too. But yeah, no, it's been great. And I suppose having that exposure from, I suppose TG Cowra were great with doing that and getting the exposure of the AFLW out there when there wasn't much else on with lockdown and stuff was great. And I suppose I'm very grateful for all that and supportive of all that too.
And just on the kind of side of things over there, and there's obviously the financial side to their sport, which we don't have here. But what we do have growing here massively, and with sports endorsed, and is players starting to kind of get endorsements, GA players getting endorsements, and you know, businesses connecting with them and helping each other out. What's your views on that in terms of the GA? Because you know, some people don't agree with it, but like I assume most players are very much in favor of it.
Yeah, I think it's great, especially seeing players get opportunities to get involved with different sponsors and stuff. As you said, it is an amateur sport, and all of these county players are working all the time and kind of rushing into training and I suppose, have such demanding lifestyles, trying to balance the both and still perform as well on game day. So I think it's fantastic. And even seeing, I suppose, women especially, how much women's sports has grown, and seeing different athletes and girls getting on top, on getting these sponsorships and getting getting opportunities like that is amazing. And it's great to kind of, I suppose, as they said, if you can't see, you can't be. So to see athletes getting this kind of makes it more realistic and believable that anyone can too.
And like, it's amazing, isn't it? Kind of the power of social media. You've got a big social media following, and you know, the opportunities there for brands, I suppose, to connect with athletes such as you. You know, it's an interesting kind of world, isn't it? That, but do you enjoy that side of things, the social media side of things, you know, kind of putting up stories and putting up posts and kind of being creative with it?
Yeah, I suppose I'm very lucky with the following that I have. I do like social media and Instagram and stuff especially, but I wouldn't think I'd know that much about it. But I suppose it is nice, and it's great when brands do approach you, and I kind of like to keep it to kind of my niche and what I like and what would benefit me maybe as an athlete or what I can relate to. But I wouldn't be much for real to just kind of talking on my stories and coming on every hour of the day. I know as well, being an athlete too, that phones are very distracting and they can take up a lot of your energy too. And some of it, like, although social media is great, a lot of it, some of it isn't too great too. So I suppose trying to find the balance between that as well. But I'm very lucky, but I wouldn't say I'm a big social media person at all.
Yeah. No, but as you said, it's all balance. And then if you're not kind of doing too much, if you're not kind of with every brand, then people know, your followers know that the ones you are with, you're kind of, there's stuff that you're very interested and passionate about.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's great exposure as well for different people as well to maybe get some sponsors or get money through that way by different opportunities. And I suppose I'm very lucky this year to get what's big for me is getting the car with John Kennedy Motors. That was huge as well, and I never thought that day would come. But I think even lots of people have been saying just to see kind of female sports players get that, it is huge. So yeah, it's definitely something I'm grateful for, and even just getting to training and stuff is great.
And what's the reaction like over in Australia when you're trying to explain to people over there that, like, you know, you're playing in Croke Park and you're playing for your county, and you know, but none of the players over here get paid? Do they kind of, is there a bit of disbelief?
Yeah, I suppose they can't really believe it, because I suppose they're not kind of used to that. I suppose just kind of explain it. And even over in Australia with clubs, you can transfer to different clubs and you can move. If you're not happy in one club, or if you get delisted, you can move to another club in, let's say, Melbourne or Perth, or you can go kind of anywhere. Whereas here, once you're playing with your county, it's kind of your county till for your whole career, really. So you kind of have to just get on with that. And I suppose they don't really, at times, maybe understand how much that can mean to a person, knowing that you can play for the county that you live in and brought up in. So I think that's really special about being able to play here. And it's something I always really look forward to coming back and I suppose getting back in with that. But I don't think they really understand the whole amateur sport and understand how everyone works and then goes training and have to get up the next day and go to work after games too. But yeah, they'll definitely be interested in that.
Yeah. I think nobody outside of Ireland understands it, but I suppose it is part of what makes it so special. But and then just for the rest of this summer with TIP, you're gonna have a busy year. Last year with the Camogie, you got to the semi final, as you said, and kind of have a common team. And with the football, you've been hit by Ashlyn is out, isn't she, with the injuries. So, but you're still in the senior, and you know you won that intermediate. So it's, you know, you never got a chance to, well, you did get the games last year, some of them, but like, this is the chance to push on and do more in the two championships.
Yeah, definitely. And with the football as well, after kind of being relegated down to Division 2 with the league. I think this is something we can really look forward to stay up in senior. We've two very hard teams. We've Cork and Meath coming up with the footballs. So it'd be really important to kind of stay up senior after such a great foundation been built over the past couple of years, moving up to get to that level. Obviously, Ashmanoli is such a huge blow, but she's still so supportive on the sideline, and hearing her voice all the time really does motivate and drive on the rest of us, which is huge. And then the same with the Camogie too. It's we kind of get to that semi-final stage the last couple of years. We're kind of knocking on, kind of getting past that door there. But no, hopefully this year now, as you said, like a lot of upcoming younger girls, which is great to see. And you still have the experienced leaders as well on the team. So it's a good mix between both teams, the Camogie and football, between that. And it's great to see how far we've come in both of them. So hopefully we can plough on and hopefully get to Croke Park this year.
I suppose just to wrap up, for younger girls, or not even for younger girls and lads, what listening in, like, what would be the main piece of advice that you would give, that you kind of you've picked up and learnt, or lessons that you've learnt along the way?
I think a big thing for me is just I kind of touched on it there about just, I suppose, not looking at the big picture and not thinking, oh, I just want to play for Tip, or I just want to win an All-Ireland final, or I just want to go out to Australia and play. I think it's just kind of, as you said, those smaller goals and kind of setting them. And I suppose really important when that age to kind of listen to what your coaches are saying and listen to the people around you, and take on as much advice as you can and kind of soak it up like a sponge as well, and kind of keep practicing and keep working on the things that you can control outside of just training as well, and kind of making it more of a lifestyle change than just turning up for training. And I suppose you're only at training for maybe 2 hours, 2 hours a couple of times a week. So what you do for the rest of those hours in the day is really important. So I think that's probably the big thing.
Yeah. The small wins every day.
Exactly.
Just to get to know a little bit more about your teammates, Orla, we have a few questions which we like to wrap up with, and we'll find out a little bit more about the dress room in Tip and in Brisbane, so you can go off of whichever dress room pops to mind. The first question, who is the best and worst trainer?
The best would probably be, it's so hard to pick between them all, but Kathy Spark stands out. She's one of the girls I play with in Australia. She's just super fast, super fit, super strong. She's kind of athlete everyone wants to be and stay up with as well. So she'd definitely be up there. And then I suppose I can't really pick anyone for the worst. Everyone.
Yeah, we leave worst.
Everyone's great.
Yeah, everyone's there doing their best. And then who can you always bet on to be last into the dressing room, to be late?
That's another hard one. Maybe at times, maybe Roisin Howard. She can just arrive on with a school bag and a hurling helmet and arrive into the dressing room. She's a bit all over the place, but no, she's gas now, in fairness.
Yeah, and you said she's playing.
She's playing the football.
She's an excuse. And then who's the dressing room DJ? Is that you?
No, definitely not me. But definitely in Australia, what I love doing before our games is we always have a big kind of rave in the dressing room. So I suppose Gabby Collingwood would be the main DJ there. She wasn't actually playing with us this year in Australia because she'd done her ACL, but she was always front and centre DJ for every game.
Yeah, definitely gives an energy boost when you have the dress room, that energy coming out of the dress room when you come out onto the field. And then who has the best and worst fashion sense?
Best and worst fashion sense. I suppose you kind of see a lot of crazy things throughout the years. Miriam Campion, who plays Camogie with us, she came on to training the other day with a very old vintage jersey, which was funny now, in fairness. So she'd probably be one of the worst fashion senses. But yeah, best, I'm not too sure. There's a lot of people who kind of like their gear and their styles, so I only have to pick just one.
Yeah, too hard. They're fashionistas in Tip.
trying to be.
yeah. But no, that's great. And thanks a million again, Orla, for your time this evening, and best of luck for the rest of the summer.
Perfect. Thanks so much.
That's all for this week, folks. Thanks once again to our guests for being part of this episode. You can find Eamon on Instagram as Eamon Donahue and Orla as Orla O'Dwyer 98. Also, thanks to you for continuing to download and listen to The Sit Down. You know we appreciate your support. So that more people can find out about this show, please comment, like, and share this podcast with your friends now. As a company or an agency, if you're interested in partnering with elite sporting personalities, you can sign up for free on platform.sportendorse.com or check us out on Instagram at sport_endorse. With this, we take your leave, and until next time, take care.